Okay. Parshas Balak. I guess you might say that this parsha is like the closest you get to maybe comedy in the Chumash. I mean, not that it's written as comedy, but if you look at the story, it's almost like slapstick comedy to some degree. In other words, the big question here is that Bilam tells the messengers of Balak over and over again that he's not going to be able to do anything that Hashem doesn't let him do. And he's not going to be able to say anything that Hashem doesn't let him say. And he's not going to be able to, but he openly says, if Balak gives me all his treasure house, I'm not going to be able to say what he wants me to say if Hashem doesn't want me to. And then, nevertheless, he goes. He tries anyway. And he keeps asking Hashem, okay, should I go, shouldn't I go? And Hashem sometimes says, go. Then Hashem says, don't go. No, first Hashem says, don't go. Then Hashem says, go. Then he makes the donkey start talking, and Bilam said, should I go home? And Hashem says, no, go. What is going on here? And then when he gets there, three times, Balak goes through a whole production, builds altars and sacrifices lots of animals, says, okay, Bilam, you're on. Bilam gets up and says the most beautiful brachas you can imagine. And Balak says, what's going on? And Bilam said, I told you. He says, okay, let's try again. And then they go to another place, and they build Mizbeach. They build the Mizbeach, and they offer karbanos, and Bilam says, okay, go. Balak says, you're on. And Bilam comes out with the next gorgeous bracha. And then Balak says, what are you doing? And Bilam said, I told you so. And this happens three times. The third time, Bilam gives the bracha on his own. And then finally, Balak gets so angry at him, he gets, get out of here before I kill you. Like, what happens here? A couple of basic questions. Why does Balak, do Balak and Bilam embark on this journey of total futility? A. Bilam knows it's futile. So why does he do it? B. Balak is told openly that it's futile, and he still, continues. Also, why is Bilam such a bad guy? If we go through the psukim, let's start looking through this, okay? Starting in Perek Chaf Beis, right in the beginning, okay? Pasuk Yud Gimel, page A58, okay? After the messengers come to Bilam and he says, let's go to sleep and see what Hashem tells me, okay? He says to them in the morning, okay? He wakes up and he says to the messengers, the first messengers of Balak, go back to your land. Ki me'ein Hashem letiti lahaloch imachem. Hashem doesn't let me go with you. If you look right before that, Hashem said to Bilam in Pasuk Yud Beis, lo teilech imachem. Don't go with them. Clear as day. So A, Hashem says don't go. Let's talk about why Hashem keeps changing his mind. And B, Bilam openly says, go home. Hashem said I can't go with you. He's a Yerei Shemayim. He listens to Hashem completely. So why is Bilam so bad? Why is Hashem changing his mind? Why do they go on this journey where it's totally futile? It's like basic questions. It makes no sense. Okay, then Pasuk Yitches, go a little further. Balak sends him more messengers. And he tells him, I am greatly going to honor you. I'm going to give you so much money and make you so important. Okay. So look what Bilam answers in 18, Pasuk 18. He says, he told the servants of Balak, if Balak gives me his entire warehouses of gold and silver, I cannot transgress as Pi Hashem. Not the littlest way and not the biggest way. But stay here, let's see. Maybe Hashem will say something different. So the second time Bilam's openly saying, I can't transgress. So far he's a Yorei Shemayim. He's a God-fearing man. He's completely honest. He's not wasting their money. He's not wasting their time. He's telling them the truth, okay? Pasuk Chaf, Hashem comes to him and says to Bilam, the following, and we're going to analyze this a little further. By the way, these ideas are from my grandfather and the Rugachever, and, of course, some ideas that came out of the Juggler and the King. By the way, that book is available. I finally got a bunch of copies. If anybody wants them, I can get them for you. Kitov got them for me, Rabbi Kaminsky, and you can...
I'll bring them next week.
We'll bring them next week. They're $25 a piece. They were hard to get. They're going out of print or are out of print, I don't know. Anyway, so Hashem says to him in Pasuk 20, Im lekra lecha ba'u ha'anashim, if the people came to call you, kum lechitam, go with you. Hashem changes his mind. But you're only going to say exactly what I tell you to say, okay? The next Pasuk, Chaf Aleph, Bilam gets up in the morning, he saddles his donkey, and he goes with the Sarei Moab, with the officers of Moab. Look at Pasuk Chaf Beis. Vayichar af Elokim ki holecho. Hashem gets angry that he's going. What is going on here? Okay. So what does he do? He makes a malach in the path that, in the, as you all know, the donkey sees and Bilam does not see. Okay? You go all the way till Lamed Daled, where Bilam starts arguing with his donkey and threatening to kill him and hitting him and all that stuff. And then Hashem opens his eyes on page 862 on top, Pasuk Lamed Aleph 31, and he sees the malach. He bows down to the ground, to the malach. Right? And the Malach says, why'd you hit your donkey, etc. Now, look at Pasuk 34. Vayomer Bilam el Malach Hashem chatasi, I sinned. I didn't know that you were standing here before me in the way. Va'atam imra be'necha, now, if it's wrong in your eyes, I'm going to go home. So, what is, Bilam has done nothing wrong that anyone can point out so far, right? Vayomer Malach Hashem el Bilam. Now, the Malach Hashem says to Bilam, no, lech im ha'anashim, go with the people. So, why did he send him to begin with to stop him? V'efes, but remember, Esadavar Sher Adaber Lecha Osadavar. Hashem is telling him for the third time, only what I tell you are you going to be able to say? Vayelech Bilam Imsari Balak. Like, what's the point here? What is going on? Go a little further to 38. Bilam gets to Balak. And Balak says, why didn't you come? And everything. He says, look, Bilam says to Balak, straight up, I've come to you now, but be aware. Do you think I can say anything? No, I can't do anything. Hadavar asher yasim elokim b'fi, whatever Hashem's going to put in my mouth, that's what I'm going to be able to say. Okay? Go into Perikav Gimel. They start the whole process. The first thing, he builds the Mizbeach, etc. He gives all kinds of karbanas. Okay? And Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Bilam lebalak. Bilam says to Balak, okay, wait here by your offerings. Maybe Hashem will appear to me. And let's see what he tells me to say. Hashem appeared to Bilam. And Bilam says, look, I set up all these mizbachot, all these altars, etc. But Yasam Hashem davar b'fi Bilam. Hashem put words in Bilam's mouth. And he says, now go and say them exactly like what I've just told you to Balak. So he comes back. Balak is waiting for him with all the officers. Pasuk Zion. Pasuk 7, he starts saying the most beautiful bracha, right? He starts saying, you called me here from the east. You asked me to curse Yaakov. But look what he says. Ma ekov lo kovakel. How can I curse? God has not cursed. How can I anger? Hashem is not angry. Like, I can't. Okay, that was the first of his statements. Turn the page to 866. Pasuk 12. Balak says to Bilam, what have you done to me? I called you to curse them and you blessed them. So Pasuk 12, Bilam says, didn't I tell you that whatever Hashem puts in my mouth, I also eshmor ladaber, that is the only thing that I'm going to be able to like preserve, to watch and to say? That's what I'm going to be able to say. There's nothing else. Okay, flip down to Chavav, the next page, 868, Pasuk 26. Again, after the second time, the beautiful bracha that he gives to Klai Yisrael, the praise. So V'yomar Balak el Bilam. Balak says to Bilam again, but you didn't curse them. Why, you just blessed them. So Bilam says again, didn't I tell you? Halo dibarti elecha lemar kol asher yadabar Hashem osa asa. Only what Hashem has spoken to me can I do. How much clearer can we get than this? And it goes on. The whole thing makes no sense. If you just read it in Pshat, okay, this whole episode. And then in Chafdalin, Bilam has a little bit of a change of heart. Okay, Vayar Bilam Kitov Beinei Hashem Levarech Es Yisrael. Bilam saw that it was good in Hashem's eyes to bless Klal Yisrael, not to curse them, to bless them. And this, now it's not a curse that turns into a bracha, but this is a real bracha. He didn't go like he had done each time to first like try to get to the sorcery and the divination, in other words, the tumma, which he tried to draw upon the tumma. And the question is here, the fact that he went each time to draw upon the kochos of tumma means that although Hashem said it to him, and he said to Balak, I can't do anything, he still tried to draw upon the forces of tumma. He was still trying to circumvent it, although he openly knew he couldn't. He stressed many times he couldn't. So, but he still was trying to, okay? So, but where does that come from? But this time he gives a big bracha, and he called the Tehiyah Lav Ruach Elokim on the bottom of 868, Pasuk Gimel, in chapter 24. And that's a compliment. Vatehi alav ruach elokim, the Spirit of God was upon him, like it says by David and Shlomo and Shaul. Vayisa mashalo, and he, with, you know, he expressed himself, and he called himself Bilam the no Ba'ar, Bilam the son of Ar, Noum Hagever Shesom Ayin, the words of the man with the open eye. Okay? Noum Shomea Imrekel, the words of him who is hearing the what Hashem says. Asher Machazeh Shakai Yechazeh, who sees the vision of Shakai. Nofel, falling down. The Galoy Enayim, with open eyes. And here comes Matovo. So this is how he's referring to himself, which we'll get to. So the secret to all of this is in the words. Embedded in the words is what the secret to what is going on here. And my grandfather explains this by helping us understand Rashi. Rashi is very, very clear. We just have to see. Rashi's telling us what is going on here. The back and forth. Why Hashem saying go, don't go. And after we understand that, we're going to understand why a person goes on a journey, on an enterprise, puts in the effort to accomplish something which they know is futile. Okay? And how they manage to get into a state of denial where they can put so much energy into something futile. Okay? And what's how the Torah describes that. Okay. Okay, so first of all, in terms of what's really going on here, first thing that happens is that the messengers come to Bilam. Okay? We're in Pasuk Tess, page 858. Okay? I'm going to look in the Rashi because Rashi tells us what's happening here. It's my grandfather. Okay. Right here. First in Pasuk. I'm sorry, let's go back. Okay, no, let's go back. Let's go to Pasuk Chav. In 858. Hmm?
You are like him.
Back and forth. Okay. Okay. Starting out here. I'm sorry, let's start in Pasuk 9. Top of 858. Vayavo Elokim El Bilam. Vayomer Mi Ha'anashim Ha'ela Imach. Who are these people with you? Okay. So, what does Balaam answer? He says, Balak ben Zippor, the king of Moab, sent me. And look what he answers. Hinei ha'am ha'yotei mi'mitzrayim. Here's a nation that came out of Mitzrayim. And look at these words. We talked about this last week. Vayichas es ein ha'aretz. What is this relation, this emphasis on the eye? Remember? They have covered the eye of the land. This is how Balaam describes them. Actually, Balak already described them like this. Let's be very careful here. What does this mean? They've come out of Mitzrayim, and they've covered the eye of the land. What in the world does that mean? Remember what we said last week about the eyes, right? We built up an idea from Rav Moshe Shapiro that the concept is that the Yitzias Mitzrayim, the generation that came out of Mitzrayim, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, that is the generation that understood the truth, they saw the truth through the Makos, through the Nisim, and through Har Sinai. They saw the truth and the only truth, that there's only Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that is the reason for everything, and that is the purpose for everything, and they understood it perfectly clearly, and they said Naseh, which we said means, we're going to take it from here, our comprehension of the truth, to our actions, to our actually, in our real lives, implementing these truths in day-to-day life. That's called Naseh. We're going to do it. We said, though, that it's not such an easy journey. It's not instant and automatic between knowing the truth and implementing it in real life. It's got to go from the mind. The legs are the implementation, the halicha, what you actually, where you go with it. It doesn't just go from the intellect to the legs. There's a couple of places it has to be rooted in between. He said first it has to take root in the heart. Remember this idea? The heart is the source, not the real heart. We call the heart, the emotions, the source of the ultimate emotions, which are love and hate. What we love, what we're drawn close to, what we want to contribute to, what we want to build, and what we hate, what we stay away from, what we don't want any part of, what we don't want to identify with, what we don't want to see and hear, nothing. Ahava and yira, love of something, and fear or awe of something, what we stay away from, what we contribute to. These are associated with the emotions, and the job is, and this was the difficulty, to take what is in the intellect and to give birth to the proper emotions, that what Hashem says is true becomes what we love, and what Hashem says is false becomes what we hate, and to give birth to anything, to create anything, to create a new bria. We always talk about how many days? How many days are the like code, like those? 40 is the mystical, magical number that always represents birthing something new, bringing something new to life. The fetus is, at 40 days, considered a new life. The mabul is 40 days and 40 nights, right? Destroy the old and give birth to the new. Everything about bringing something new into existence is 40. It's supposed to be 40 days between the experience of Har Sinai to the Kabbalah Saluchos. The Luchos is the heart. Kosfei Maluach Libechem, right? The Luchos are a muscle for the heart. They're real Luchos, but it's a... to have something in our possession, tangible, that's our real emotions that we feel, the luchos, that can take what we know to be true and extend it and become the source for our choices and our actions. Because if our actions are an expression of, an extension of what we want to do, then they flow naturally. Remember we said last week, the luchos were broken. And that generation that came out of Mitzrayim was not the generation that went into Eretz Yisrael. So what we said about that is what happens to a person often is they can have truth in their mind, but it dies in a midbar because the heart is not aligned with what the mind knows, okay? In other words, it's not rooted in the heart. So therefore, even if they go into Eretz Yisrael, okay, we're like that too. Even if we move forward and do the actions and conquer, so to speak, those forces that are, you know, set up against us. In other words, we compel ourselves to do what's right and live correctly. It's not because it's an extension of what we want to do. It's because we're forcing ourselves to do it. Because in between what we know to be true and what we're doing is a midbar. Right? So the actions come out of a midbar. So you can force yourself, a desert, right? A dead place. In other words, you can force yourself to behave correctly. But what's going to happen, we talked about this last week, you're not going to necessarily hold on to what you conquer. You're not necessarily going to be able to maintain what you conquer. You might even be banished or exiled and find yourself back out. In other words, you can force yourself to behave correctly, but you can't rely on it because it's not coming from a natural extension. So what we're talking about last week was a disconnection between what you know to be true and what you feel, which leads to actions which kind of like have to, you know, you have to, which kind of like... being disconnected are not trustworthy, okay? That disconnection, what we know to be true and what we desire is what's going on here, okay? When Bilam says, when Balak says, they covered the Ein Ha'aretz, we said last week, and this goes back to the Mon. Remember, we went all the way back. After the Luchos were broken, this is a whole process being built here, a whole binyan, a whole structure is being built here. After the Luchos were broken, that was it. A big midbar between the intellect and the actions, between the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people going out of Mitzrayim, and those, so to speak, coming into Eretz Yisrael is just a midbar. Those that come out die in the midbar. Those that go in come from a midbar. And no, that midbar, there's repair. There's tikkun. Hashem allows us to, gives us a second Luchos, right? We have second Luchos. And they're given with on a condition of Rachmanas. Remember the 13 Midos? Hashem, Kel Rachum, Bachanan. Endless mercy and patience and kindness. That's linked to the second Luchos. Remember when Moshe fashioned the second Luchos up on the mountain, Hashem taught him the 13 Midos at the same time. All the mercy and love. In other words, when a person finds that they can't necessarily take what's in their mind and what's true and root it in their emotions, and therefore they make so many mistakes and their actions are sometimes good and sometimes bad and they're lurching from Tzadik to Russia, etc. Hashem has endless rachmanus. That's the second luchos. Will stay with us. Will be patient with us. Will still be connected to us. Will give us time to kind of like create that continuum. All right, but it's dependent on one thing: the eyes. This becomes a very important function. The metaphor of the eyes. The job of the eyes is. This becomes okay. The job of the eyes is to take what the intellect knows to be true and see the world according to those truths. When a person allows themselves to ignore the truths and see the world according to the impression it makes on them right here, right now, based on their limited interpretation of things, the eyes are not working correctly, then the intellect can never take root in the emotions because the eyes have been able to distort everything. The job is, this is the avoda, that the eyes must see what the intellect knows to be true. We must see it from the perspective of what's emes, from Hashem's eyes. We must not allow ourselves to see things from our own point of view. That's what's happening here. Balak says, they've come out of Mitzrayim. These are the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the original generation of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, right? That these are the children that came out. These are the children, but they lived in a midbar, which means in that midbar they were showered with all kinds of open miracles, which taught them to see things from Hashem's perspective. They, because you live in a state of Nisim, you begin to see that Hashem is the source of everything, the purpose of everything. This generation was raised up in the school of Hirsch says of Emuna, real Emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Bullock says they've covered the Ein Haaretz. In other words, you can interpret it to mean that the nations don't want us here. Hitler himself said the exact same thing. The Jews are the conscience of mankind. In other words, they don't want people here whose message is, whose identity is, that you must see the world from the perspective of truth. You have no right to ignore truth or to try to destroy truth so that you can interpret the world, see the world, and interpret it according to your own interests. We stand here to say you can't live in a lie. You can't misinterpret this world. You have to be honest and see the world for the truth that it is and the purpose that it is. And that's what Yimach Shemo Hitler said. We don't want a conscience. We don't want a conscience telling us, no, you're not allowed to see the world that way. You're not allowed to set up your country that way. Hitler, Yimach Shemo Vizicho, his philosophy was will to power, which is basically survival of the fittest. If you have the power, you may rule. If you can, you may, period. You can overtake everyone, destroy everybody, do anything you want if you can. Will to power. And the Jewish people say that's not true. In survival of the fittest, the strong overpower the weak. From Hashem's perspective, the strong protect the weak. The strong limit their own power so the weak can also live. It's a whole different arrangement because everybody's Tzelem Elokim. So they have covered the eye, our eyes, okay? We want to see things from down here in the Aretz, not from Shemayim. They're coming with eyes that are connected to Shemayim, and they've covered the eye of the land, the way the people here see things, and we don't like that. Okay, that's how it starts. Now, Bilam, then Hashem says to Bilam, lo teilechem ahem, no, you are not going to go with them and curse them, because if you are against, you and Bilam and Balak are against this mission, this identity of Klal Yisrael, that your hatred comes from the ideological hatred for the mission of Klal Yisrael, and L'shem Shemayim, you want to destroy, in other words, really, L'shma, from deep in your core, you don't want Klal Yisrael to exist, because you don't want the conscience of mankind here on your tail, around you, you can't go with them. In other words, if your hatred is coming from a hatred of the MS, you're not allowed to go with them, and you're not allowed to do anything because they're blessed. So Bilam gets up in the morning, and he tells them the truth. Balak sends him new people. Look in Pasuk 20, okay? Okay. Pasuk 20, Hashem Elokim comes to Bilam and says to him, Im likro lecha ba'oha anashim. If to call you, the people came. Kum lechitam, go with them. Now this seems what's happening here. Look in Rashi. Im hakriya shalach. Okay, v'savur ata litol aleha schar kum lechitam. If this is to call, if the calling is for you, your services as Bilam the Navi. It has nothing to do with your personal agenda. And it's strictly so that you can make money. And your interests are to get a great reward. Go. What is this coming down to? A question of not whether he'll be successful. Either way, he's never going to be successful. What is happening here?
Money.
Motivation. If you're cursing because of sinna, you can't go. If you just want to make money and you're not lishma, you're not doing it for ideological reasons, go gesundheit. Now here's the point: the end result is the same. What we're clearly focusing on here is what Hashem is judging, and let's say why is Bilam a bad guy? What Hashem is judging Bilam on, and what this whole story revolves around is what is Bilam's motivations. That's what this is all about. Why are you going to curse Klal Yisrael? Are you lishma, or you're not lishma? You're for real ideological reasons, or you're doing it for gain? In other words, We're going to talk about this, what this has deeper implications. In other words, is your heart in it or not? Okay? Now, take it further. So look at what happens in Pasuk Chavalef. Now, this tells us a little bit more about Bilam. Vayachlosh es asono. You know that phrase. He got up and he saddled his own donkey. Remember this? Tell me about this. Yitz Avram did it too. Look what Rashi says. Now we know what's motivating Bilam. Look at Rashi. Sina mekalkeles as Ashur. Because hatred makes you do crazy things. Bilam went and saddled his own donkey. He was a big, very wealthy man, etc. He ran out to the stables and he saddled his donkey. And there's a whole question why his donkey, not his horse, but whatever. Bilam, so now Rashi's telling us there was sinna there, okay? Shechavash hu ba'atzmo. He himself couldn't hold back. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Russia, that's where you're Russia, okay? And you're not going to win because Avraham's l'shem shamayim, totally l'shma, love for Klal Yisrael, is going to overcome your hatred for Klal Yisrael. But what's happening here is what makes Bilam a Russia is strictly what nobody knows, not even the servants of Balak, why he's going. Okay, what's in his own heart, all right? By the way, when Hashem tells him the second time you can go, all right, you can go with them, but you're only going to say what I tell you to say, he doesn't tell them that right away. Now, look what happens. Pasuk Chafes, Vayichar af Elokim ki holecho. Now Hashem is angry at him. And there's a little hint here, my grandfather points out, in ki holech hu, all right, that he was going. Now, we heard already, Hashem said, if you're going for money, go. But when he sees that excitement, that hatred, now Hashem is angry at him for going. That was a rule. You can't go if you're going because you hate Klal Yisrael. Then stay back. You have no right. But here's more. My grandfather asked a very simple question. He saddles his donkey, Vayelech im sarei Moab, and he starts going with the officers of Moab. But the next pasuk says, Vayichar af Elokim, Elokim got angry, ki holechu. And he puts a malach in the derech. And where are the sarei Moab here? We don't hear about them. We just hear about Bilam and the Malach. He's going alone. He's going ki holechu. And they're not there in this whole conversation with the donkey, nothing. And only until the end of the whole story with the donkey, when Hashem and Bilam says, do you want me to turn back? And Hashem says, no, you can go ahead with them. Then you see, Pasuk Lamed Hei, Vayomer Malach Hashem el Bilam, Lech im ha'anashim, go with the people. My grandfather points out here, he'd saddled his donkey, he started journeying with the Sarei Moav, and then he was in such a rush to be able to curse Klal Yisrael for his own hatred that he traveled ahead of them. Ki holechu, alone. He was by himself. As soon as Hashem sees that he separated himself and he's going on his own in his own mission, Hashem sends a malach to stop him. So Bilam says to the malach, should I go back? Now, we have a principle. Hashem lets a person go the way they want to go. So the Malach says, you don't have to go back, but go with them. In other words, go as an employee. The people that are paying you, go for money. If you're going for business, so you can go with them. Lech im ha'anashim. Look in Pasuk, where are we? Are we here? Yeah. Go with the people. That's what you have to do. So, in other words, Hashem is giving him warnings. He's saying, look at yourself. If a person is allowed, there are many reasons people have weaknesses, but know yourself, know the weakness that's drawing you here. It's better, really, that your weakness be for gaiva, for kavod, and money, and fame, then your weakness be for real ideological reasons. If your weakness is ideological reasons, stop yourself. You're not allowed to go. But if you give up your ideological hatred, because it's futile anyway, because I've told you 10 times and you're not going to be able to succeed, and you just want to go then for the money because you've come to the emes that cursing them is worthless, so go for the money. Because if something is not l'shem shamayim, it has no real power. If it's not l'shma, for real, you know, coming out of your emotions, it's not really going to be that dangerous. If it's coming from your emotions, we're going to see it comes from a much more dangerous place. Okay?
Now, you have the word ephes afterwards. It reminds me of the Raglan, that same word, ephes.
That is true. There's so much in here that we can't do. Every little thing, but there's so much here. Now, what we're going to get to now is a Gemara and a Pasuk from the Navi. Yeshayahu, and the Rogachover's explanation of what the Gemara was referring to help explain psychologically, in a deep way, how it is possible for a person to know, like Bilam, that what he's trying to do to curse Klal Yisrael is not possible, that they're blessed. To struggle with himself, to accept the fact that he can't, that if his hatred comes from his, you know, desire to eliminate Klal Yisrael, it won't work. There's no way. He's only going to promote them and strengthen them, like Haman and Korach. Remember we talked about the Rishayim? That a Rasha, through their own free choice, through all their attempts to undermine, right, the ultimate will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the success or the strength of Klal Yisrael and Klal Yisrael's ability to reach their destination, all their own choices will come back to be those specific choices that will promote Klal Yisrael, like Haman, like Korach, who spends his whole time in Gehenna screaming, Moshe Emes v'Torasim Emes. Remember Moshe Shapiro said, this is their tikkun. They too are used as proofs by HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the one Emes, but through their own choices and through being having to spend their life saying, it is my hard work that promoted Klal Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Right? So of course Bilam could recognize this is going to happen. Hashem's telling him it's going to happen. So how do you fool yourself? And how do you go into that place of denial and still try to, like we see by Bilam, try to go over to the sorcery and the other, like it's Kochos Satuma, and get some inspiration from them, get some koach from them, and still try to do what you know you can't do. And of course, as we said, the koach of wanting to do something and being able to overcome it because you know the truth, that's what Hashem is trying to help Bilam do here. Just let go of your hatred and your attempt to do something you can't do. And if you're interested in, superficial reasons, that's a different ballgame. But focus on the truth. So the Gemara says that in explaining how people can go blind and enter into a state of total, put all their efforts into something futile, the Gemara goes back to the ultimate metaphor, the ultimate image for the blindness and the Yetzer Hara, which of course is the Nachash. Okay, now, remember the Nachash said, "V'nipkachu einecham," your eyes are going to open, which is not, as Rambam explains in the second chapter of Mor Nevuchim, a benefit, because you cannot have a benefit from a sin. It's obviously a great flaw and diminution, because now you're seeing, that's the eyes, what you want to see, and not, it's not in line at all, aligned at all with the truth. So Gemara says in Baba Basra, on Daf Ayin Dalet 74 Amud Beis, by the way, thanks to Heshi for all this little angle to it, that speaking about Vayivra Elokim es hataninim hagdolim, Hashem created the big sea monsters. Remember that in Bereishis? Okay. So this is obviously all explained according to the Chazal. They're telling us what this is referring to. Okay. Rav Yochanan said, Ze Livyason Nachash Bariach. Remember we started talking about this a few weeks ago. This Tanin Hagdolim, the sea monsters, what's that referring to? Though this is all not to be thought of in literal terms, there's something called the Livyason, the Leviathan, and it's the Nachash Bariach, the curled snake. Okay? There's also a Livyason, a Kalosun, the outstretched snake. There's also a Livyason, Nachash Akalosun, the Livyason of the curved snake. So there are sea monsters. There's one is called the Livyason, this like mystical huge creature called the Livyason, which is called the outstretched snake. And there's a Livyason, which is the curled snake. And in Yeshayahu, it says that in the future, okay, on that great day, in the future, when everyone will come finally to know Hashem, Hashem will take his great and mighty sword and strike and destroy the straight snake and the curved snake. That in the end, Hashem is going to, with his sword, slaughter the Leviathan, the curved snake, and the Leviathan, the straight snake. Okay. The Gemara is talking to us, telling us stuff. And again, the Gemara does not write in essay form. And Avraham Feldman in The Juggler and the King brings down this and explains this a little bit. So the first thing is, that there are two reasons that a person goes into a state of total denial and begins to embark on a journey of total futility, trying to create something that's not creatable, in Bilam's case, cursing Klal Yisrael. Okay? One is that they completely ignore the MS that's knowable and that they themselves know, which is us, by the way. We all have that element of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which means we all have those moments in our life, those epiphanies of we know what's true. We all have the Sfarim, we all have the Torah, we're Klal Yisrael, have been around a long time, we have a history, we have grandparents. We have knowledge of the MS. Not all the MS, but enough. Okay? How is it possible that what's in here stays in here and doesn't impose itself at all on our emotions and on our actions? So one is called the curved snake and one is called the outstretched snake, the nachash, okay? The nachash blinds us. Remember, he said, your eyes will be opened, you won't see the truth. The nachash comes in two forms. Our blindness comes in two forms. One is that we just choose to ignore completely the MS, and that's the curved snake. In other words, it winds itself around the person and squeezes them until they can't live anymore. What that means is it imprisons the person. It traps a person and their whole life force drains out. And what are those traps and prisons? Those are our desperate need for pleasure and kavod, kina, taiva, and kavod, all right? Arrogance, importance, you know, self-promotion, pleasures, self-gratification, and we begin to go blind and see the world the way we want to see it so that we can provide ourselves all those things that we want. That's one. That's called the curved snake, and that is dangerous enough. It will destroy the person, okay? But it's going to destroy the person by squeezing, so to speak, depleting the person. Squeezing the breath out of the person. They can't live anymore. There's another kind of way we block out and go blind. And that is we make a decision, this is the outstretched one, that it's going to approach straight, aggressively, and attack and kill. In other words, this is the attempt to distort the MS. Not to ignore the MS, but to rewrite it, to completely distort it, to turn a truth into a lie, to give alternate explanations for things, and therefore legitimize what we're doing. Not give in to gaiva and taiva because we're weak and we're suffering and we're trapped. Okay? But to actually, and therefore, you know, say, what can we do? The heart is willing, but the flesh is weak. But this is an aggressive attempt to rewrite the truth, to give it a whole different, to say that the truth as Hashem expressed it is not true. Our truth is right. And we do this, everybody does it on different levels. The great Rishayim do it on the real levels, coming up with completely, denying Kodesh Baruch Hu completely, eliminating Klal Yisrael who represent any truth, you know, refusing to see the world the way Hashem saw it, and going on the attack against everything that is associated with Torah and mitzvahs, to destroy it, to eradicate it. That comes from sinah, from hatred of it. Okay? This is what's happening here. Bilam is the character that, although he completely knows the truth, is being asked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to define himself. Is he motivated by the curved, in other words, gaiva and taiva, the traps of pleasure and power that are waiting for him? Is that what's motivating him? In which case, Hashem says, you know what, that's less dangerous. I let you go. Because it's just going to end up destroying you. As we all know, narcissism ultimately destroys the person who's the narcissist. Because it's without talking about it too much, that's how it works. It's self-destructive. But if it's coming from an aggressive attempt to destroy all that is true in the world, and you're doing it, and you're going to give up money for it, and give up pleasure for it, like the Osama bin Laden's, Yimach Shemo, who moved from a palace to a cave to destroy what's right and good in this world, okay, give up, in other words, the opposite of wanting kina and taiva and pleasure, you're willing to forego that all to attack Hashem directly, and what Hashem stands for directly, then he says, then you can't go. Why can't you go? He's saving Bilam. He's saying, look, wanting pleasure, you're just going to destroy yourself. But when your choices come from hatred, I'm telling you, like Haman and like Korach, your own choices are going to be the promotion of Klal Yisrael. You will spend the rest of eternity being the one that promoted Klal Yisrael. That is your Gehenna. It's also your Tikkun, but it's suffering, so to speak, forever. Your own interests are going to be that's going to strengthen Klal Yisrael. Do you want that to be your fate forever? Don't go. Don't go. Because this is not a story of destroying yourself. This is a story of condemning yourself. Your destiny will be blessing Klal Yisrael, so to speak, for the rest of your life. Now, the truth is, if we think about it for ourselves, The greatest humiliation and frustration is what we try to do to promote ourselves destroys us and promotes our enemy. Imagine having to live with that forever. Hashem is warning him. That's how it's going to play out. But the blindness is so strong that we ignore this and we pursue it anyway. That's what's happening here. Now, on this idea of this nachash coming in two different forms, okay, the Ragachavra, great Gaon of the last century, explains in his notes on the Mora Nevuchim, which are then explicated by Rav Kasher. You know who Rav Kasher is? He wrote the Torah Shlema. The Torah Shlema is basically every medrash on every pasuk of Chumash, all done by memorization and by knowledge before computers. Okay, it's a huge work. Rav Kasher is famous, called Torah Shlema. Anyway, he explains the Ragachavra's notes on the Mora Nevuchim, which talks about this. And he talks about what is this whole idea of the Nachash, and we call the Yetzer the Nachash and all that. And it comes in all these different forms. So he brings, that's why the Juggle and the Kim talks about this. One of those Sabe de Be'atuna, remember, we always talk about this, the Sabe de Be'atuna, the riddles, where the elders of Greece asked, well, at this point it was, they asked, hold on, let me find this here. Yeshua ben Hananya, first the Caesar, I'm sorry, this before he went there, the Caesar, the Caesar of Rome, asked Yeshua ben Hananya a question, and when he answered it, he said, okay, go debate the elders in Athens. And the question that the Caesar asked Yeshua ben Hananya is, Nachash lekama miver umolid. How long is a nachash pregnant before it gives birth? Okay, how long is the gestation? This is a riddle. Okay, what's going on here? What does the question mean? It helps us understand the whole concept of the nachash. So to make a long story short, so Yeshua ben Hananya says 7 years. They're talking about, by the way, the birth of Mashiach. How long till Mashiach is born? Because nachash and Mashiach, same gematria. Except that the Nachash is with a Nun, which is 50, and which represents Nefila, falling. And Mashiach is with a Mem and a Yud, which is 40 and 10. 40 is birth, and 10 is always Olam Haba. In other words, the process of giving birth to the Emes, that's Mashiach, and the process of destroying it, falling, Nofel, to this, taking the truth and pushing it down, that's the Nachash. Anyway, how long is a Nachash pregnant? What they're talking about here is how Mashiach, how does truth emerge? So Yeshua ben Hananya says 7 years, of course, 7,000 years, right after the end of the 6,000. So they say, no, it's only 3 years. So he says, well, they took a Nachash that's already pregnant. Whatever this means, okay? Whatever this means. We're not going to go into it now. So, but they're brilliant, they're smart. He goes, but I'm a greater chacham than them. They took one that's already pregnant. What does this all mean? Taking a snake that's already pregnant and impregnating. They said, we impregnated a snake and it was only pregnant for 3 years. He said, yeah, but the snake was already pregnant. Now, what is happening here? So he explains, the Ragachev explains, that the way Hashem set up the world, we might go 5 minutes over here, this is very important. This is very profound. The way Hashem set up the world is that every single creature, other than the Nachash, has a taiva, a desire, only for what it needs to survive. It has no desire for something futile. It has no desire to destroy itself. It has no desire to end its life for no reason. An animal only has a taiva for what it must have to ensure its survival. And when it has what it needs, the taiva is dead. It doesn't function anymore. It goes to sleep. It doesn't engage in anything futile. Because of all kinds of rationalizations and fantasies. Animals don't fantasize and then engage in futile behavior. Okay. The only animal, now this was what they said many thousands of years ago. I don't know the current science on it, but this is what they said. They said the nachash is the only animal that Hashem created that the female will receive a male snake, when it's already pregnant. In other words, it will indulge in something, let's say for pleasure or gratification, that has no purpose. That's the secret of the concept of the Nachash. That Hashem created a force in this world, okay, which tempts us. The Medrash already says, Nachash is our Yetzirah. The mushel of our Yetzirah and how it operates is a snake, which will copulate when it's pregnant, which means it will engage in something totally futile. Okay, that's a physical mushel for the way Hashem created us. We have the capacity to delude ourselves into thinking something has a toelus, has a purpose, when it is futile. We will allow ourselves to indulge in and put effort into something that we really know has no purpose. And why will we allow ourselves to do it? There are two reasons, the curled or the stretched out. Either because we want the pleasure. So we create for ourselves a fantasy world where we're allowed to indulge in these things, but that fantasy world does not exist. It's only in our brain, and one day it will vanish, and we will get to see that we completely deluded ourselves. And what we put effort into is nothing, hevel. It created nothing, except all it did was destroy us. Okay, that's what we call, by the way, the fire of Gehenna. Rav Moshe Shapiro explains that a fire takes something that you can see and touch and measure and has weight, and it makes it vanish. It doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. Vaporized into nothing, into energy. So Gehenna, called the fire, means the fantasy land that we created for ourselves doesn't exist at all. The bubble bursts, and all of a sudden we all have probably in our lives, and it's a bracha to experience this, because it helps us understand the bigger picture, to be in a situation where what we thought was the case isn't the case at all. And especially when we were so sure something was that, and we defended it, and we acted on it, and we made choices based on it, and it was all in our minds. It was not reality. It was wrong. It was a mistake. It was a misunderstanding. That's a bracha, to go through that, because that shows us what it would be like in the real world, and how to make sure that we're always trying to see things from the perspective of truth. That's the so-called fire of Gehenna. Okay. But the ability to do this exists. That's our Yetzirah. To go to block out the emes, which is right there, which will not by itself impose itself on us. We have to go seek it. We must go draw upon it. That's called using the eyes correctly. Opening our eyes so that we can see from the perspective of the truth. Okay, it's cool. That's the muscle of the eyes. We have to open our eyes and draw upon the emes which is in there. Okay, but it will not impose itself upon us. So, therefore, the danger arises that we can build a fantasy land for ourselves because we don't look to the emes for explanations. Then, based on that fantasy, we exert a huge amount of effort in futility. That's called the nachash. Just for either pleasure, okay, or gratification or kavod or whatever it is. And in the end, we get nothing from it except the so-called fires of Gehenna. The outstretched one is when a person goes ahead and says, I don't want to be beholden to Hashem's truth. I insist on asserting my own truth because we mistake HaKadosh Baruch Hu for ourselves. And we become the source and the arbiter of all things that are true. And we go on the attack against which is true by giving you. So that's not, and we do this all the time in our arguments. Somebody presents an idea and we say, it can't be like that. And we give all kinds of excuses because in the end, what it really is a desire not to be beholden to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to something greater than us and truer than us that will ultimately limit us. And force us to, forgo things that we would like to have for ourselves. So that's also a danger. That's also a danger. But the idea here is that koach to therefore, because of either of the, and both are futile. Attacking HaKadosh Baruch Hu and trying to undermine the MS is not only futile, the person becomes the mouthpiece for that MS. That's the ultimate double cross, the ultimate twist. They become that. They become the promoter of what they're trying to destroy. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you look in the Rashis and you look at the back and forth, this is what's going on. If you're going to go up against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, know yourself. There's one way you destroy yourself. There's one way where you cause yourself to live forever in contradiction to yourself. Okay? Don't do that one. That's the worst one. That's not the way to go. and stop yourself along the way. Hashem gave him opportunities to stop, but in the end, to actually stop was Bilaam's own choice, right? To not go, to know why he's going and go. These were Bilaam's. Hashem lets people have free choice. In the end, Bilaam gives us the great brachas that are beautiful brachas. And you know what one of the brachas are? Let's just quickly look at this bracha that we have to see at the very end. And by the way, he calls himself in his final bracha. He says, "I am open-eyed now. For the first time, I'm open-eyed. Right now, for the first time, I'm hearing correctly." The very end, before he says Matovu, he sees the truth. But look what he says here. 1 minute. 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Hold on. I'm sorry. Okay, here. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, page 868. The second one. What does he say? Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim. And look at the bottom of 866. Kel Motziam mi Mitzrayim. Hashem brought them out of Egypt. Ketoafos Re'im Lo. According to his powers. Look at the next words. Kilo Nachash B'Yakov. Kilo V'lo Kesem B'Yisrael. Okay? In other words, Nachash is also a word for sorcery, but one of the ways of interpretation is that ultimately for Klal Yisrael, this is a temporary state. Hashem gave us the Yetzirah, but in the end, Hashem is going to slaughter this. And what that means is Hashem is going to bring clarity where we will not delude ourselves, enter into futile efforts that ultimately destroy ourselves or turn us into the best Shaliach for Hashem, but through our rishos, through the wickedness, God forbid. And ultimately, this in the end Klal Yisrael will not succumb to this. They will not ultimately just be destroyed from this. They will always pull themselves up. They will always open their eyes. They will always come back. This will never ultimately. I want to add one more thing. I'm sorry. One last thing that my grandfather said that is so beautiful on this parsha. He asked a basic question. Okay, why when the donkey opens its mouth to speak to Bilaam, okay, he argues with it. He's not astonished. He doesn't fall down on his thing. He just argues with the donkey. My grandfather uses that as an explanation that when a person, okay, refuses to see the emes, lives in their own world where their interests and their interpretations are everything and blocks out the emes completely, what dies in the person is the ability to be amazed, to be impressed, to stand back and say, "Ooh, I never thought of it this way," to consider something else. Bilaam has no ability to even hear what the donkey's saying. He just screams at the donkey, "Why are you stopping? I'm going to kill you. Did I ever do it?" And the donkey answers him, and he just argues. In other words, this whole thing should cause a person who's still kind of able to be objective to say, "What is going on here?" But he's so unable to be objective that he's lost the ability to be nispa'el, to be amazed. And he says that's exactly the curse of the nachash. That's what happens when a person allows themselves to be, so to speak, succumbed to the nachash. What's the curse of the nachash? Everything you eat is going to taste like nothing. Never be excited. Never feel any type of thrill. Never look for nothing. It's all zero. In other words, never being able to be awakened, to be excited, to stand back, to have any type of my grandfather's amazement, or to be impressed by anything. That's the curse. When we build our own fantasy world and block out what the truth that we could, that could inform us and enlighten us, everything goes, we become cynical. We have all kinds of reasons why we don't have to hear anything. So one antidote to this, a halacha. This is about bracha and klala. We make brachas every single day, okay? A bracha means we become amazed that this apple I'm eating is a creation of Hashem for me to help me appreciate Hashem. When you make a bracha, it means you don't just go through things by habit. It means we take a minute and we appreciate it. The halacha is in a bracha that shame and malchus have to be clearly enunciated. That means the shame means Hashem's name, and malchus means the word melech. So when you make a bracha, you have to specifically focus on Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech. Those three words. Hashem Elokeinu Melech. If a person doesn't say shame and malchus with kavana, the bracha is... Yes. Very good. Excellent. Nechesh, she says to guess, to take a chance. Not to know directly. Right, just to jump in with it. All right, everybody, have a wonderful week.
And my mother's generation believed that